Okay, here it is, November 27th. This is Knights Party Roundtable Discussion. And I'm Thomas Robb.
Jason Robb.
And Rachel's not here today, so it's really not a roundtable, just across the table.
Across the table, yeah. So, but we're still sitting at a roundtable. Yeah. But hopefully everyone had a great Thanksgiving. And hopefully got to spend some time with your family members. And if you're traveling back, hopefully you have a safe trip. And I always like to laugh that you were able to stand with some of your family members on discussions, political discussions.
I heard a guy on TV the other day, Brian Kilmeade. Now, they mentioned about him being a licensed psychiatrist, a psychologist in the state of New York. Right. And some of those people at Fox News have other alternate careers.
Oh, absolutely.
But when I looked up his name in Wikipedia, not that Wikipedia is the final answer to that thing.
Right.
I didn't see anything there about his education being in that area. And then he jokingly said, well, I don't know if he was joking. He said, yeah, well, why don't you have Dr. Brian Kilmeade on my banner there? You know, mm-hmm. So I don't know if he's joking or not.
Right.
But anyway, the next part was kind of funny. He said, everybody tells you, when you go to your Thanksgiving vacation or dinner, and there's people, other political thought there, just be quiet, don't say anything, that, you know, just try to keep peace. Don't talk about politics. Don't talk about religion. That's the worst thing to do. He said, if you have a belief, state it up front. Let people know. He said, you never live with yourself. He said, if you whip out, you know, state your ground. Stand your ground. If they don't like it, they'll have to deal with it. You know. So, anyway.
That's great.
Yeah, I thought that was kind of funny. Stand your ground. They'll have to let them deal with it. You know, you won't be able to live with yourself. You cower down.
Absolutely.
Anyway, I thought that was funny.
That was great.
Yeah. So, because we don't have any problem with our Thanksgiving because we're all of same thought.
Right. Yeah. When we get together, our families and friends, because first off, that's who we hang around with. You know,
and you look for a wife or a husband, that's who you're looking for.
Yeah, you're looking for. Yeah. You know? And so I can understand some people, and I guess if they marry someone and their spouses may believe the same, but you know, their family members may not. I can sometimes understand why certain subjects you just don't discuss, you know. But that is still funny that you have stuff like that to happen. But, you know, one thing I would think that most people would agree with, you know, around their Thanksgiving dinner table and they were talking about is all the rioters that's happening, the Black Lives Matter, you know, so-called Black Lives Matter that is being done throughout the major cities, so where they're causing havoc. I would think that most people would agree that that's obviously not a good thing, and that's not acceptable.
Right.
But, well, who knows? You might have a liberal family member who might think, well, that's their right to go out there and bring awareness to all the tragedy.
They might be out there helping them.
They may be. But you know, it's always possible. But, you know, Thanksgiving, a lot of people, you know, I would hope people realize it. But if they don't, then they need to take some time on this. But, you know, Thanksgiving really is not a holiday just to spend time with family and eat turkey and mashed potatoes and gravy. You know, Thanksgiving really is a Christian holiday. It was a holiday celebrating Christianity in the United States, and it was just a perpetual honoring of God that our ancestors, the pilgrims, and before them acknowledged that God, you know, basically was restoring His kingdom on this earth, and they looked at America as the regathering place of Israel, which we understand it to be the white race. And you know, the pilgrims on that, they understood that. And really that's what the Thanksgiving holiday was all about up until really the 50s and 60s.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, a lot of people, you know, think, oh, a great time to be with family, which is true, to eat. Well, that's good, true. But the most important thing was to celebrate God. And not just for the harvest, but basically thanking God for this great country that He established on this earth. And but most people are not taught that anymore. because they really don't know their history. But I would encourage people, even after, even though Thanksgiving is already over with now, that they can still read up about really the original purpose of Thanksgiving. Mm-hmm. And I believe Christian Revival Center, is it .net? I believe, or .com. But you,
ChristianRevivalCenter.net.
You can actually, there's articles on there about Thanksgiving, about early America, purpose of Thanksgiving. I would really encourage our listeners to go on the website, and I think we may have some even on KKK.com. But read that up. I mean, do some research, because I think sometimes we kind of know it, we assume we know it, but then anything beyond that, we really don't know the in-depth history or facts. And sometimes it's good to really just kind of remind ourselves really what this was about.
Yeah. Well, the pilgrims sincerely felt that they were being led by God. They didn't feel so much that they were driven out of England as much as they were led out of England by God to America, which they considered a special place.
Right.
And, you know, the early James Morton, I think the name was, I may have the first name wrong, but he wrote the first history of the colonies back in like 1660, 1670, somewhere in there. And he said that they looked upon this land as God's holy habitation.
Right.
And so they did acknowledge that America, there was something unique about this land that had been held in reserve for thousands of years while wars are being conducted in Europe and kingdoms rose and kingdoms fell and life went on. America was just kind of like protected. It was not a part of all that old ancient history.
Right.
And, you know, it's considered, it's half the land mass of the globe.
Right.
And
they thought they were in the same type of situation as when Moses, you know, led the children of Israel out of Egypt. You know, they thought of them as the same people, because they thought of themselves as the same people, but they thought of them kind of the same purpose. You know, Moses, and when he left left Egypt, you know, the children of Israel, they didn't think of themselves as being driven out, that they were being led out by God, you know? Mm-hmm. And they thought of the same thing, that they were being led to America to basically reestablish, you know, the kingdom of God and to
That as a Mayflower compact.
Right.
They say that very thing.
Yeah, exactly. And that's another thing people ought to be reading, the Mayflower compact, to actually understand the mindset of our early forefathers and foremothers.
And I would probably venture to say, maybe I'm mistaken, that people probably in their 30s, 40s, maybe older than that, but I was somewhere in that age, probably 40s. But when you say the Mayflower Compact, they probably know what you're referring to. When you get into the younger generation, I'm not so sure they even know what you're talking about.
Oh, I when almost you say guarantee they don't.
The Mayflower Compact, or what the hell is that, you know?
Right.
There are going to be some students who are going to know, because there's some kids that are bright and they catch on. But so often, history is just not taught in schools. White history is not taught, except for the fact that white people came here and oppressed the Indians and stole the land from them.
Well, I always tell
enslaved Negroes, yeah. And that's history of white people.
Well, I always tell people there's three parts of history that's being taught in your public schools. The first history is really quick of Europe, and then people came to America and they stole the lands from the Indians. That's the first part, okay, which is then white guilt. The second part is that the Civil War era, where we had this travesty against the blacks, and the Union rose up and fought to free the slaves, you know. Again, white guilt, because it really shows about how evil white people are. Mm-hmm. And then the third part of history, which is the greatest part, that there really wasn't freedom in the United States until the Civil Rights era. And so in the 60s, with Martin Luther King and all the civil rights icons, as they would call it, rose up, that's when really the first time in America we actually had freedom. And that time, now it's not white guilt per much, but now we are to honor the Black Civil Rights era. And that's the three really parts of history that kids are being taught anymore. Mm-hmm. And so they're not being taught about the Mayflower Compact. They're not being taught about, you know, the Declaration of Independence, the Constitution, the history about that, the founding
fathers.
The reason
why our forefathers struck up for independence, you know, the abuses of King George and England upon colonies.
It's not taught about that at all.
Not taught about that.
And if they do teach about that, it's about, okay, how sometimes it's great, but also on the flip side, there were evil people because of the fact that there was slavery during that time.
Yeah.
And so it's a way, a constant way to belittle to our people, to make our students to be ashamed of their past, be ashamed of their founding forefathers. And that's the purpose of it, instilling that white guilt.
Yeah. And they've done it very successfully. It's amazing because kids are just not being, and they're not stupid. Mm. And I know different schools, maybe your rural areas are a little bit better than some of your major cities. You know, I don't know, and certainly we're not implying that kids are stupid coming out of college or high school. They're not stupid.
They're just not being taught.
But they're just not being taught. They're not being taught,
yeah.
And this has nothing to do with history, but I was in Walmart the other day, and about 10 pounds of chicken was on sale for 38 cents a pound. About 38 cents a pound, 10 pounds is $3.80. I mean, I don't have to figure it out.
Right.
That's what it is. And he got the bag, and I said, that's on sale. I'm comping that for 38 cents a pound from over at Edwards or Country Mart, where I was at. And he's okay. And then he reached for the calculator to figure out 38 cents a pound for 10 pounds. And I said, it'll be $3.80. He said, oh, you're good. You know? And I said, well, I went to school when they still taught math. And he didn't say anything. He's right at $3.80 and went out of the way. But it's really a shame. I mean, it's just a simple mathematical, you know.
Right.
Figure.
Just move the decimal.
Yeah, 38 cents a pound, 10 pounds, $3.80. I can tell you instantly, Jason.
Right.
Yeah. That 100 pounds would be $38.
Wow.
Isn't that amazing?
I didn't even think about that.
A thousand.
And I couldn't add that up because I don't have my calculator. But but you're absolutely right. And again, it's not because the kids are stupid. They're not taught. Right. I mean, it's just simply they are not being taught.
They're being deprived of potential.
Well, and what we've always said, and you know, anyone that's what you would call, you know, a conservative would say the same thing, is that children in general are just not being taught, and in schools for the most part, and I would say kind of depends where you're at, but for the most part, from any National Education Association. Schools are basically a place not to really learn the ABCs, you know, but it's there for a social program. It's there to basically try to manipulate the kids' minds in order to raise them up for an agenda. And that is really the purpose of schools now as what the NEA, the National Educational Association, wants, you know. Up until this, you know, the 1960s, I mean, really, there wasn't a Department of Education. There was just, it was all local control and everything else. But
William Z. Foster, in his book, Toward a Soviet America, he was a communist, head of the Communist Party back in the 30s and 40s. He suggested in that book, Toward Soviet America, one of the agendas of the American Communist Party was for the federal government to engage in and create a Department of Education.
Right.
A national department of education, oversee public school systems, oversee their education. And that, of course, is what upon us now.
Yeah. Well, really, in education really has now been dummied down. And that's what really has come down to. They're not being taught, but just the education has been dumbed down in order to everyone be able to be on the same, what they would call the playing field. And so if you get students that are not very
level,
smart.
Level playing field.
Yeah.
A level playing field, in a sense,
right.
I mean, metaphorically here, but doesn't create strength in your legs. You need to go climb uphill.
Absolutely, absolutely.
You know, when you go hiking and stuff like that, you climb uphill, climb downhill.
But if everyone's not succeeding, well, how do you make sure everyone succeeds?
Yeah.
You make it so the program so that everyone can succeed. Mm-hmm. And that's how you dumb down your education.
Here's another Walmart experience. Well, maybe this was a Walmart. This was a Dollar General store. Okay, I bought an item. It came to $9.11. I'm supposed to get 89 cents back. Okay. That's what the register said. She right. rang up 89 cents on the register. And I wasn't paying attention. I looked up and saw 89 cents. So it was already rung up, but I saw the 89 cents. So I handed the guy a penny. That means I should get 90 cents back.
Right.
I handed a penny. I said, just go ahead and give me 90 cents back. And I guess he really didn't know what to do with it. So to make sure he didn't make a mistake, because I want to get rid of, I didn't want to carry the penny amount, and I want to get four of them, yeah. I want to nickel.
Exactly.
So I hate getting back to get 90 cents back. Said, oh, okay. So then he counted out 89 cents. So I get, 89, just like the register said. Then he gave me another penny. So I, he gave him my penny back to me. So I still ended up with 5 pennies. You know, instead of quitting it into a nickel,
yeah.
90 cents, he counted out the 89 cents that the little register showed.
Right.
Then I was only 90 cents back, so then he added the penny to it. I just said, but yes, thank you, okay.
In his mind, he's thinking, that's weird. A guy gave me a penny yeah. back?
And that I'm, dumb old man, what's the matter with him?
I don't know what he's doing.
You know that's what he's thinking.
Yeah. Now realizing that, yeah, you're the one who's really a fool because you don't know what you're doing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, he probably did think that. He said, why do you have me that penny for? I had yeah. to give back to him anyway.
There was a thing I saw on Facebook, and I'm sure most people have seen stuff like this. But you know, they a lot of times people, you know, the liberal socialists, you know, they will talk about how, you know, the early forefathers, you know, they were just really dumb, ignorant people. They really were not sophisticated like we are now.
Oh yeah, right.
And
illiterate.
Right, Leo Lara didn't know. Even though the early forefathers, they all like spoke Latin, and they several of them could speak, you know, several multiple languages, and they knew history of all the great civilizations of the past. I mean, they were students of history. I mean, they were very learned men and women, but they don't want to talk about that, so they just talk about how backwards they were, and people nowadays are more enlightened and intellectuals. But then you look at the school books that kids are reading now, and what kids read even up until the 30s and 40s, you know, and it's amazing because there was a Facebook that I got a message about last week, and they were comparing a typical seventh grade book that kids read in Minnesota at just a regular public school in Minnesota and what kids are reading now. Okay. And this was all the way up until I think like the 30s or 40s. Okay. So it wasn't that long ago. Okay. In seventh grade, they were learning, they were reading Shakespeare. They were reading Tales of Two Cities. They were reading some of your classics, you know, and then what they're reading now, and it's like movies like Twilight, you know, which is a vampire movie, but they're reading books that are from movies, you know, and so they're not really reading anything like the classics or anything that really stimulates your brain. It's just basically you're reading
movie scripts.
Yeah, I mean, you're regurgitating what a movie was, and so you're not really learning the classics. You're not reading history, and. And it was so amazing to see just the difference. And then there was also within that same Facebook post, the math, you know, and the things that seventh graders had to learn, you know, just your math, totally different from now. Now with Common Core, you know, if you have, let's say, 5 + 5, well, most people say 10, you know, but in a Common Core, you know, you got to draw 5 boxes. Then you got to draw another 5 boxes, and then you can count those up. Or if you want to do multiplication, let's say 5 times 2 would be 10. Well, you would have 5 boxes, and then you would draw 2 characters in each box, you know, and then you would try to count all those up. I mean, Common Core is just crazy stuff.
Is that what they do?
Yeah, they literally will do that, and so that's the
well because they're trying to educate
through pictures.
Uneducated people,
right?
But they're maybe not impossible to be educated,
right? And so that's what they're trying to do now, and that's a Common Core. And so that's why people are like, oh my gosh, how can you make our kids even more stupid? You know, because you're doing this stuff, you know, or the simple, you know, math problems where, you know, you had 25, let's say plus 25, you know,
38 cents times 10.
Yeah. Traditionally you would have 25 and underneath that would be 25. You have the 5 and 5, and that's be 10 carried over. Oh no, not Common Core now. Yeah. Common Core, you have to do all this like program of boxes and drawing your, you know, circles around the boxes and the lines and diagonal and all that. And so that's, yeah, I mean, they're making it dumbed down so much that your lowest form of I can't even call them intellectuals. Your lowest form of beings can try to understand how to do a math problem, you know? So it's the idea of getting the people that are hard and struggling with stuff, try to get them to rise up to the challenge. Now we're trying to get our best and brightest to go lower down to meet the ones that can't do it, you know, and that's just another form of social reengineering, you know. And one good thing that I did see, I haven't looked up to it, but Donald Trump has appointed this lady who's going to be over the Department of Education, and I guess she is very much against Common Core,
yeah,
and against, she wants more local control for schools and stuff like that. Yeah. That's what I understand. I have not researched it.
That's true, but that's what I understand also.
And that's definitely needs to be there.
Yeah, I hope that's true.
Yeah.
I hope they carry out the, and a lot of other programs, I hope they carry it out. We'll just have to see. You know, this deal of not indicting Hillary Clinton, I kind of go along with that.
Right.
Much as I detest Hillary Clinton, that should be the role of the Attorney General.
Right.
And if the president gets in, he becomes an advocate for that. I think that creates a wrong precedent because it would give the appearance that it's just Donald Trump trying to even with Hillary, that he's personally involved in prosecuting her. And I think he's best off, just like he's doing, kind of falling back and say, well, that's not my role as president.
Right.
You know, whatever the Department of Education right. or the Education. The
Attorney General.
Yes. That's their role to do.
And plus, if your goal is to get some of these policies through Congress and passed and get implemented, you won't be focused on that and not focused just on let's try to get back with Hillary, which I would love to. I mean, I would love to see Hillary behind prison.
But I want to see Hillary. I want to see the Attorney General do that.
Right. But at the same token, I want troops on our borders. I want our jobs coming back from overseas. I want trades and tariffs back. I want all these programs that's going to benefit America. I want those implemented. And if you're focused on just one thing, then you're not able to implement these other policies. Yeah. And that's what we need. It doesn't mean that in the back of his mind, Donald Trump's saying, oh, we're going to get Hillary.
Right.
It might be a couple of years down the road through investigations. Well, we're going to get her, you know, somehow. He might, and I think he's still thinking that, you know, somehow. Because the fact that if your agenda is we are going to go after her, then all Obama has to do is say, I'm pardoning her. And then you're not going to be able to file charges.
Yeah.
You know? But if you're basically saying we're not going to do anything, after he's gone, he can't pardon her anymore.
Right.
You know? And so a lot of it is just strategy.
Yeah. That's what people. I think he's being really criticized by some of your never Trump people.
Right.
Like Red States Mayor Eric Erickson.
Yeah.
He just stopped all that. I read it, it's really kind of funny.
Right.
I think, how ridiculous can you get?
Right.
But I know he's really going after Trump because of his saying he's not going to go after Hillary. And we told you so.
Right.
You know.
Well, people like that, they're not looking at the long-term agenda.
Yeah. It's like him going into the New York Times.
Right.
You know, when I first heard that, I'm sitting here with a mom. We're watching TV and said, Donald Trump went into the New York Times office today. I told mom, that's what I would have done.
Exactly.
That's what I would. That is smart move.
Right.
You know, because he, in a sense, he went right to their den, yeah. You know, and just, I'm not going to back away from you. I'm right here. He did it with a smile, shaking yeah. hands, but he went right into their face.
Absolutely.
And yet all the Never Trump people are saying, oh, he's going to them. He tried to make a piece about the New York Times. We told you so.
Right,
you
right. know.
But I thought, even before I heard anything, I said, that's what I would. That was a good move.
Well, it not only because you're going there and shoving it in the face, but in a way, it's a little bit of intimidation.
Oh, absolutely.
Because you're there saying, I'm going to be president.
Yeah.
I have an eye on you now.
Yeah.
You know, even though you didn't even smile,
yeah.
you know.
Oh, yeah.
And it's a smart move. Oh, a very yeah. smart move.
Yeah.
And people don't understand that.
They're planning backing down and change the policy now.
Right.
You know. Saying they're changing policy. I don't know. He might be a lying SOB.
Right.
And he might become president. He might not do anything. And that's we don't know. But the thing is, I think he's going to follow through this stuff because he wants to get reelected in 4 years.
Exactly. And he knows he needs that white vote.
Yeah. And I do think he really does. I know he's messed up in some ways. I know that. But I really do think you look at what he put on the line financially.
Exactly.
I mean, he did not have to do this.
Right.
And even they say he's backing off from building the wall. The only thing he says, or maybe some places we had to put a fence up. Well, that makes sense. I mean, right. there are some places, maybe, you know.
But realistically, I mean, it comes right down to it. In all realistically, you don't even need a wall.
Yeah.
If you had troops on the border, if you could enforce your
policy
border control,
inside the United States,
exactly.
if you're enforcing our policy. Because they keep saying, well, immigration law policy. We need to fix an immigration deal. Really?
Right.
I wish one of these commentators, I wish one of them would say, really, what has to be fixed?
Right.
Because I hear that all the time. Well, we're having trouble because we got to fix our immigration. We got to fix our immigration. We need comprehensive immigration reform. We got to fix it. I would like to hear one of them say, well, what has to be fixed?
Right.
It's against the law to enter the country. The only thing that has to be fixed is our will.
Exactly.
Our will to determine to allow that this will not happen.
And the thing is, he's not, I don't think, I just don't think he's going to back down because all the law enforcement agencies, all the border patrol, they are behind Trump. And Trump knows that.
Yeah.
And he's going to make sure that they have supplies, they have manpower. He's going to make sure that border is protected. And so, yeah, he may say, okay, we don't need a wall. We don't need a wall now. We got a bunch of troops on the borders and yeah. we're stopping them all. And we don't need it. And our economic policies now, you know, employers, if you're trying employing illegals, you're going to be fined outrageously. And you have e-verified checks, which basically when an employer hires someone, they have to do a background check to make sure that person's a legal resident. So the fact is that if you just implement those policies, you really don't need a border. You know, a border is just basically saying, or not a border, but a wall. A wall is just to say, okay, we're trying to keep people from coming in. Well, that yes, that's true. But if you have manpower there, then you don't even need a wall, you know? Yeah. And so if we had manpower and willingness to actually stop them, they would do that. This idea of withholding federal aid to sanctuary cities, you know? No. We've been in favor of that for decades.
Yeah.
Oh, you want our $25 million a year for your road departments and construction? Well, enforce our laws. If you don't want it, you have every right to not enforce it, but you're not getting our money.
Right.
You know, that's kind of controlling the purse. That's how they do that with all highway departments.
Of course, they're all saying, he can't do that. You know, but everyone said, yeah, he can.
Well,
he don't even have to go through Congress. He can just do it with his pen.
Well, that's how they all these states, you know, that's why for just as simple as DWI laws, okay, is if you want to have legal age drinking be 21, then make sure your laws in each state is 21, okay? And if you do that, then you can get our federal funding, you know, and you can get each state can get $20 million a year or whatever the case may be. If you don't want to have underage or legal age being 21, if you want to have 18, you have every right to do that, but you just don't get the federal funding. And so every state's saying, well, no, we want that $20 million. Yeah. And we're going to make sure we pass our laws that says 21 years of age.
Yeah. And let me just say, too, and I know you're going to agree with me, Jason, that the idea that the federal government, even though this would be in a good way, but just the idea that the federal government could blackmail people through money
right.
in itself actually is wrong. It should be up to the state. The state should decide what they want to do within their own state.
Yeah.
There should not be federal aid going to anybody, because as the song says, it's really not federal aid. The money is yours and mine.
Right.
It's really our money. But if they got that federal aid program, they're going to use it.
Right.
But might as well use it as a hammer against those people trying to destroy
us. Absolutely.
But
I would like
to see more power go to the states, less power given to the federal government, more enforcement of the 10th Amendment to the Constitution,
right,
and let the state control the affairs within their district. Now, right, as far as immigration, that is a federal policy.
Right.
That is a federal issue. That, right from the get-go, immigration was under the federal control. So they do have a right to enforce their immigration policy into the states. And even if there isn't money, they have the right, as far as I'm concerned, they have the right to go and arrest and indict people within the states who do not enforce federal law.
Right, right. And with that, and that's where you have your state and federal governments, they have concurrent powers. And even though the federal government does have the ultimate authority to enforce our immigration policies, I think states do also have a right to enforce their state laws that's dealing with immigration. So you have, illegal aliens crossing the borders. If the federal government starts saying, well, we're not going to force it, I think the states have a right to make sure that their people are protected. You know,
correct.
So it's a kind of a concurrent jurisdiction that I think that states still have a right. If the federal government is not going to enforce the laws on the book, I think the state has a right.
So that's what happened there in Arizona.
Right.
Arizona wasn't trying to pass new laws. They're just trying to enforce the federal law.
Exactly.
And they got sued for following federal law,
right,
by the federal government.
Exactly.
And so that's a little bit different issue than a local jurisdiction creating their own law.
And I would love,
sanctuary cities is a creation of their own immigration law.
Exactly. I would love to see Sheriff Joe, is it Airpo?
Apile.
And Phoenix. I would love to see him be the director of the Border Patrol.
Yeah.
There's been a lot of people really voicing not a concern, but voicing approval of him to being that. I would love that, because he would do a tremendous job.
Yeah.
You know, if he was the – and I think that there's a strong possibility that happened.
That'd be great.
Yeah. And because all that's doing is that's going to cause – ultimately, that's going to cause a security for the United States. It's going to cause the slowdown of illegal immigration. Of course, people are not talking about the legal immigrants, but let's just talk about illegals. But also, that is going to cause a lot of issues with these aggressive Southwest states like California and Arizona, New Mexico, where there's really an uprising for your Mexican community who's wanted to succeed from the United States, you know,
yeah,
and try and enforce their own laws. That's going to cause tension in those states,
right,
because all of a sudden you have Border patrols basically stopping illegal immigrants coming in. Guys, you talk about havoc in California. I mean, that's going to be causing big problems.
Yeah.
You know, because
and problems are not always bad. Some people say when the forefathers said we're going to declare ourselves an independent nation, that created problems.
Right.
You know, created a lot of problems.
Caused inconvenience.
Yeah, it caused inconvenience. Absolutely. But you know, whenever you make a change for the good, it's going to have a reaction from the bad.
Yeah.
They're going to react to it. So,
and there will be a reaction from the Mexicans. There won't be a reaction from the white people.
Right.
There will be a reaction from the Mexicans. That's where you're going to get your reaction.
Polarization is absolutely necessary in this country.
And what race to survive. Absolutely. And the thing is, either the first or second largest income to Mexico is from those that live in the United States that send their checks
back home
to Mexico.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a huge amount. And if all of a sudden you have that slowing down and the income is not coming to Mexico, that is going to cause problems, you know, in itself. Now, with the Mexicans, now with white people.
Those American workers working in America that didn't really be staying in America.
Absolutely.
It goes back to Mexico.
Exactly.
To build their country.
Right. You know, and so all of that is just a benefit to the United States. I mean, it just is. And so, anyway, I think some of these policies that Trump is going to do. That's something that we have been suggesting, the Knights Party and White Resistance have been suggesting for decades. We were suggesting that before it was even popular.
Yeah.
You know, and so, you know, because people need to remember it was the Republicans of the 90s that were so much in favor of NAFTA and GATT and all this free trade, the globalism. They were all in favor of that. We held,
I think, the first protest to the Ronald Reagan's amnesty law.
Right.
In Washington, D.C., back in 1981. And we've been outspoken on this for a long time. We just don't have the money to force ourselves into the national media that Donald Trump had.
Right.
And, you know, so what he's doing is really great.
Yeah. And there's been other people in, you know, before Donald Trump, there was around that was in politics that was in favor of a lot of stuff, what he's doing, Ron yeah. Paul, but again, from Texas. But again, he did not have that money.
Yeah.
They couldn't shun Donald Trump because yeah. he had so much money. He's like, okay, I don't need your money. I'm going to do whatever, you know.
Right.
And so they were not able to shun him. Yeah. And so I think that, again, goes back to the point of, you know, I really do believe Donald Trump sincerely wants America to reflect that how it used to be. You know, and a lot of people say, oh, no, he's not trying to make it a white country. Well, he may not be thinking about it, but he knows America used to be a really great country. He's 70 years old, so he knows how it was in the 50s and 60s and early 70s when, I mean, America was thriving. It was a white country. It was like Leave It to the Beaver show. I mean, he knows how America was. And he knows that if it continued to go down that same path, his grandchildren wasn't going to be able to enjoy that. They would have a lot of money still, but they're not going to be able to enjoy it, you know. And so Donald Trump, I think, really, truly believes that he can help make America great again from his slogan. But he put a lot on the line, you know. He put his wealth on the line, his, you know, personal financial, but health.
Life on the line. I mean, that man is extremely vulnerable for assassination.
I mean, vast majority of the people, the average person out there, or even those in the white resistance, if they had that much money like Donald Trump, and they knew that they could almost lose it all by being as vocal as he would, I would dare to venture say that most of them would not do that. They would say, "No, I got my wealth. I'm glad. I'm gonna keep on working. I'll work behind the scenes, you know, like that." But I'm going to go out and speak the will of the people. And those will of the people are those that in the white resistance movement for decades have been echoing and voicing, for many, many years. And with the continual decline of the white population, we could really see what was happening in the United States. And we still see it now. So it's not like fight's over now.
Right.
It's just really beginning.
And reclaiming our national borders, resistance to globalism, is not just in the United States. It's over in France.
Yes.
And Marine Le Pen, is a good possibility she might become president of France.
Absolutely.
It's amazing the rise occurring there. And then you've got the Gold Dawn Party in Greece. You've got
the Brexit vote.
The Brexit vote was outstanding. The second largest political party in Denmark, even though Denmark's a small country, is a country that is fighting against immigrants flooding through the country.
Yeah.
Wanting to claim and reclaim Denmark for Danish people.
Yeah.
In Germany, you got a tremendous rise of what is called the Alternative for Germany Party, led by a woman named Claude Petri, I think it is. And you had this resistance going all through Europe.
Well, there was a thing I saw yesterday on the internet. I'm trying to remember what Middle Eastern country, European country was, not Middle Eastern, Eastern Europe country. I don't know if it's like, it's probably wrong, but anyways, I won't say Croatia, but it's not Croatia. But anyway, they've just passed a law saying Muslims themselves are not allowed to be citizens in the country.
Yeah.
You know, and so there is a really an uprising of white people throughout the world. Because they know this this advancement of the destruction of their individual cultures. And it has happened quickly. It's not something that's just happened slowly, which it has, but it's like we've always talked about, it's a trickling, but then it starts becoming a tidal wave and a flood.
Yeah.
And that's what they're seeing now. That's what we see here.
And people say, what's so important about a culture? So, you know, the culture is the traditions and the values that protects the people. People are protected. It's like the bark around the tree. You know, the bark around the tree protects the tree. And the culture is our bark. It's our values, our traditions, our ideals, our morals. All those things are reflected in our culture. And they are what protects the people at the inner core. And so it's very important. Our culture is very important to protect. Let's switch subject for a second, Jason. We have here recently the talk a lot about the alt-right.
Yes.
And I the alt-right, and I want to blend this into with the internet, okay? Because a couple of the articles I read, one recently was just came out yesterday. You may have seen it. I know you saw it. I don't know if you read it or not. About an English reporter over here in Harrison. And he makes reference to the alt-right. But he kind of took the idea that the alt-right was something different from the Knights, from the Klan.
Right.
You know, that the Klan is, the old white races are kind of dying off. And now we see the rise of the alt-right. It's all the same thing.
It's all the same thing.
Now, there is no such thing as the alt-right different from the Knights. The alt-right is just a new name that's been attached to the white resistance.
Right.
But the white resistance has been growing at a phenomenal rate ever since the internet. And the internet has allowed this to grow because it creates a... the alt-right really isn't something new. It's just a new name for the white resistance. And the reason it's catching attention now is because Hillary Clinton spoke in Reno, Nevada, mentioning the alt-right. She said they used to be called a white nationalist. Now they're called alt-right. Well, yeah, it's the same, but the same thing.
Exactly. It's not different people.
Yeah, not different people or different organization or different approach. It's just this growth that's going on ever since the internet, because the internet created the ability to bypass the national media.
Right.
And so now, and we've always said, if the people could hear what we had to say, they would get behind us. But they cannot hear what we have to say. And the internet allowed them to do that.
Right.
We have been vindicated. What we have been saying has been shown to be true. The masses of people will support our program if they can hear our message. We couldn't get that message to them previously, but now with the internet, the message going out the rules have changed, and we have the creation now of what I call the citizen journalist.
Right.
Anybody get on the internet and videotape incidents, stories, riots occurring, their own messages, their own thoughts, news items, and put it on the internet, and people can go straight to it. They don't need to go to the New York Times or the Washington Post or whatever. They can see the news straight over the internet. And so maybe sometimes it's skewed up, maybe sometimes not accurate. But most of real news that you read about on the internet is true.
Right.
There's some wacky stuff out there. I understand that. But it is
some wacky stuff come from your main media. You
absolutely, absolutely. So what has created the alt-right is the internet.
Right. It's no one organization or anything like that. People sometimes think the alt-right is like one organization.
Like the NPR.
Yeah, it's not an organization at all.
Yeah.
You know, and so it's one of those things that, the alt-right is the same as
white resistance.
Yeah, white resistance. Exact same thing.
Yeah, it's just a different name that's being used now, but it's the same thing. It's the resistance to globalism and everything that entails. And it's growing not just only in this country, but all through Europe, Australia. We got the One People's Party, I think it was called, in Australia. You got this growth in Greece, like I mentioned earlier, Golden Dawn. It's a worldwide rebellion against globalism.
Right.
So, anyway, Rachel, Jason, I think we should cut this short today because I know I just got a phone call and I've got to run. And I know you don't want to babble on by yourself.
Right. Well, we just really appreciate all our listeners out there. And thank you for your continual support. It's people like you that allow us to every day be able to reach our people out there and with our conferences, our newspapers, our literature distribution. We really appreciate our listeners and our faithful supporters. If it wasn't without you, we wouldn't be able to be here today.
We do need your support. You know, we probably are the most vocal, established alt-right, if to use their modern term now, organization in the country. For our publications, our internet presence, 24-hour broadcasting on alt-right TV, on White Pride Radio, our brick-and-mortar structure, our camp, our office, the church facility, the cabins. We're not just an internet presence. Because Hillary Clinton made comments. She said, the alt-right, mostly online. Well, no, it's not mostly online. It's mostly in hard-working individuals who work online, but also work on the streets, distribute literature and so on, get into the hands of the people. Our conferences, the European American Heritage Festival, Pulaski, Tennessee. So the alt-right movement, as it's being called now, the next party probably is the most active alt-right organization in the country.
Right.
But we need your help. There's millions of people out there that needs to be reached with this message of racial identity, white identity. And we need your help to do that. So get behind us and hit that donate button or send a contribution to P.O. Box 2222 Harrison, Arkansas 72601. And so I guess with all that being said, you have anything else?
I don't.
All right. Fantastic. Hope you had a good Thanksgiving. The weekend is about over. Thanksgiving weekend ends tonight. So anyway, drive careful. Talk to you later. Bye-bye. Oh, and I forgot to say, love your God and love your people. Fantastic. All right.